All right, that brings us to item nine, which is a presentation from PARS regarding the IRC Section 115 trust for OPEB benefits for CISERA employees. Welcome, good morning. Floor is yours whenever you're ready. We're ready.
Is it already on? Okay, there we go. Good morning, board members. Thank you so much for everyone's time. Once again, my name is Jennifer Meza with PARS. Today, I also have Andrew Brown from PFM. We're going to be presenting your Section 115 trust that your agency uses to pre-fund for your retiree health care obligations today. Here's our contact information. We're accessible at any point in time if you have questions after this meeting as well. Slide number three, I belong to the company on the top hand side there, PARS, for the ongoing administrators and consultants of the program. We do have three different companies, essentially company names, that administer this program and help manage the plan on behalf of your agency. PARS has continued to be the same company since the inception, and U.S. Bank is the trustee, and that's remained the same. There is one change to the bottom right-hand side, and I'm going to go ahead and have Andrew explain that information.
Yes, good morning. My name is Andrew Brown, portfolio manager for PFM Asset Management, and I guess after 11 weeks, it just rolls off my tongue now. You've known me previously as a member of Highmark Capital Management, and so I guess similar to last year, I get to start with just a very quick corporate update, although last year I was giving you liquidity ratio and capital ratio updates on U.S. Bank in the wake of Silicon Valley and First Republic. Yeah. This year, a little bit different of a corporate update, and it has to do with PFM Asset Management. As a reminder, Highmark was a subsidiary of Union Bank for about 20 years. And in the U.S. Bank acquisition of Union Bank in December of 2022, Highmark rolled up to U.S. Bank. A year prior, U.S. Bank bought in 2021 PFM Asset Management, an asset manager based out of Philadelphia as well as Harrisburg. At the bottom of the page here, it shows $229 billion in assets under management. Highmark represented $9 billion of that, and PFM was about $220 billion of that. So the decision in 2023 was to roll Highmark into PFM, and that commenced there at the end of last year. So we are all now under the Registered Investment Advisor designation of PFM Asset Management. Typically, at a presentation like this, I would say something like, oh, we expect a seamless transition with no impact to the client. And I think for the most part, I would offer that wholeheartedly. From a portfolio management standpoint, PFM probably believes a little bit more in passive management on the equity side specifically. And from day one, we've practiced passive management on the equity portfolio within the OPEB plan. So I would think that would continue, carry on. Maybe on the fixed income side, more of an active bent to PFM. And here within the OPEB plan, we've been about 65 to 70% historically utilizing active management. So I would not expect that to change at all as well. Might we refresh the investment policy statement sometime over the next couple of months? Sure. Yeah. On a personnel standpoint, I'm still the lead of the PARS platform at PFM. So hopefully nothing changes on that front. The only thing that might change that I would offer the board is just the reporting format. PFM utilizes a different investment platform for presentations. So that will change on a go-forward basis. But other than that, I won't say seamless, but I'll say a pretty consistent offering for you on a go-forward basis.
Well, thank you for that upbeat clarification. Nothing like a seamless transition, you know. You bet. When it goes that way, it's fine. So it sounds like it's going smoothly, or has gone, I should say.
Perfect. Thank you, Andrew. The way we have structured this presentation is we're going to go through the assets and liability first, and then we'll go into the investments. but please stop us at any point in time if you have questions along the way. Slide number 4 of the presentation, the top portion shows you when the program started. Again, this is the pre-funding trust. We don't offer any of the actual retiree health care benefits. You're just using this vehicle to put money aside for those liabilities. This started back in 2018. As a board, you did designate the chief executive officer as the plan administrator to sign off on any changes that your agency would like to make to this program. You are in a custom strategy, which Andrew is going to talk about the investments on there. Bottom portion shows you your assets since inception. You've contributed a total of $4.6 million into this program. You have taken out some money for these liabilities, approximately $614,000. The earnings on the account since inception, $1.2 million. There have been some expenses of $127,000, making your account balance as of December 31st at $5.07 million in the account. Yes.
We've earned, oh, thank you. since 2018, we've earned $1.2 million.
Correct.
On $4.6 million?
Correct.
So since 2018, we've gotten like 20% plus returns.
On an annualized basis, we're going to show you 5.88 net on an annualized basis.
Okay.
And then they didn't start out with 4.6. They started out with a much lower number, so.
Right. No, which even more impressive, yeah.
On slide number 5, we show you this data based on the last year alone, how the plan did in 2023. In this time frame, you did contribute $158,000 into the program. You did take about $222,000 out of the account. For the earnings, I do apologize, there is a typo. There should not be any parentheses around the earnings.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Yeah. But yeah.
It is a positive $592,000 on there. So the number is correct, just not the parentheses. And expenses, $28,000. Again, that account balance at $5.07 million in the account. The next two slides is just a summary of your latest actuarial valuation results. This is done by a company named Milliman. We're just highlighting the results on this on these two pages. Slide number 6, from the latest report, it's just a roll forward. It's not a full valuation. So the demographic information remained the same. No changes since the 2022 report. On slide number 7, we see the latest numbers. The discount rate remained the same, so the long-term expected rate of return at 6.5, that stayed the same. The total OPEB liability did increase slightly to $4.7 million. Again, different costs for those ongoing liabilities for those active individuals increased that on there. The planned fiduciary net position, or how much money you had at the time that this valuation was done, I was also $5.7 million on there. So you're still at a great funded position at 108%. So it's certainly a great thing that your agency has done by doing a 115 program, because that's the only way that you can offset that net OPEB liability on there. And then you can see the ongoing contributions that are indicated by the actuary to submit into this plan, about $168,000. And then your annual benefit payments, which is what you can take out of the trust if you need to, about $259,000. Okay. With that, it's just a quick overview regarding the assets and liability. I'm going to turn it over to Andrew, unless anybody has any questions regarding the slides we just saw.
Any questions for Jennifer on that information? Not seeing any, so thank you.
Quick question. I mean, so we're at 108% now.
Yes.
108% funded.
Correct.
Okay. So just when thinking about this, looking at our other liability, Paul Angelo was thinking that, you know, you just leave things alone until you get to about 120%. Then you think about reduction of contributions. And is that a similar strategy that we would apply to this? program?
It is similar, but there's a difference with an OPEB and a pension. So as we saw on the previous page, there is a roll forward that's done. So you can see that the actives and retiree number on there shows the same because we're using the same data, and then we roll it forward in time, but not in experience. So next year, we're going to do a full valuation, and we'll see some of those retirees that we had, Cesera retirees from last year, well, 22, so for this report, the year prior, it'll capture those because we know that we had a higher amount of retirees than in any of our other years. So when that full valuation is done, we're going to see that liability increase there. We're going to see some of the 108 come down. So we're monitoring that and then watching to see if we start creeping up too high, then we would review the ADC and when that gets contributed, what the market is doing. So all those factors are looked at, but it's a little bit more delayed when we look at stuff because of this roll forward aspect.
Okay. It's where the actuarial world meets the real world. We're going to true it up. That's my short summation of that.
I'm going to steal that soundbite going forward, Chair Gordon. That's a good one. Yeah, and so I know we're the last item on the agenda, and I know you get the economic data from a variety of sources, and I heard StepStone earlier, so I'm going to try to keep the economic overview to about 2 minutes, but it's important for you to know kind of what we think about the world going forward. If this was a Highmark presentation, you would typically see a one-page PowerPoint slide that had five or six economic forecast items on a 12-month go-forward basis. PFM uses a heat map, which I kind of like. I'm getting used to it. It conveys, how we think about a variety of economic metrics here. Green is good, yellow is neutral, orange is slightly negative, and red's really negative. And as you see on the screen, the black dot usually nestles somewhere in the green side of things. So just very quickly, when you think about the last 6 months of last year, GDP couldn't have asked for more. 4.9% in the third quarter and 3.2% in the fourth quarter. Smack dab in the middle there, the page, consumer spending has been strong, propelling economic growth there at 12 o'clock. Consumer continues to spend. Yeah, you got 1% of GDP growth in the third quarter of last year from government spending. But by and large, this is a consumer spending story. A year ago, when I had the Highmark forecast items on this page, we were calling for a small recession. Minus 0.5% was our forecast for GDP in 2023, and that was a complete air ball. And that was an air ball because the labor markets were very, very strong. Unemployment right now, 3.9%. It's going to be the 25th straight month in a row of unemployment less than 4%. You got to go back to the 60s to find a longer duration, a period of time when unemployment was as strong. So labor markets are strong, and that probably, I think that more than anything else explains why we missed the recession call last year. You'll notice in the upper right-hand corner, inflation, we have that moving from a yellow to a green. CPI might be a little bit sticky if you're favoring CPI, but PCE or core PCE, both below 3%, in shouting distance of the Fed's 2% target. So we think the next 6 to 12 months is going to continue to be favorable on inflation. Monetary policy in the upper left-hand corner of this exhibit, we moved it from an orange, slightly negative, to a yellow neutral. The move to yellow is in recognition of the Fed pivot in the fourth quarter of last year, where Jay Powell and the FOMC said we're done hiking rates, and by and large, we're looking to cut rates three times over 2024. Haven't cut yet. Still pretty high. So we'll keep it yellow until maybe we feel we're on the on-deck circle of those rate cuts. Or if inflation stays sticky and moves up, maybe we'll move it back to the orange. The last panel I'll just briefly touch on is the bottom right-hand corner, political risks. We have that rated as a red. It's the only red rating on this page. Most of these political risks are geopolitical in nature. Israel, Hamas, Russia, Ukraine, third year of that conflict. China's potential ambitions in the South China Sea. I mean, those are the dynamics that merit the red. Sure, top it off with the next 7 to 8 months of the campaign trail with the, who knows what's going to happen there. It's an easy thing to put red, at least at this point, on our color-coded heat map.
I was going to say one of the big political risks is just within the U.S. with the divisiveness
that we have and so forth, and how that's going to impact policy going forward.
Vice Chair McDonald, we would like to be able to focus our thinking on, okay, well, what would 4 more years of a Biden administration lead to in terms of policy, and or what would a second term of Trump yield in terms of tariffs, trade policies there. But the divisiveness is something that we don't know how to model. But when you think about the sitting president's son going to be in a courtroom and the leading Republican candidate having, what, 3, 4, I think, trials of his own. It tends to yield divisiveness when the country's 50-50 to begin with. Can't model it, but can't ignore it.
Yeah.
Okay, which leads to the performance page. As Chair Gordon said, life is good when you're beating the benchmark, and then when you're not beating the benchmark, it's whatever the opposite of life is good. On an absolute basis, 12.57%, I'm happy to show that to you for the calendar year 2023. Absolute basis, strong numbers, and a 62% stock, 38% bond portfolio. It's a bounce back year. Bounce back year from 2022. Cash, the top line, booked almost 5%. We don't have much in terms of cash balances, 0.5% to maybe 1%. The star of the show probably should be equities at 18.08%. I mean, that's where the bulk of the assets are. But I don't want to ignore the fixed income line item, 6.1%, outperforming all 3 of the benchmarks. And this is the only area of the plan where we practice active management from a standpoint of hiring managers to beat benchmarks. So 6.1%, very happy with that, especially when you think about what the Bloomberg Ag has yielded. Over the 4-year period, it hasn't even booked a percent for the benchmark here. And if you go back 10 years on an annualized basis, the Bloomberg Ag through December 31 of last year, 1.8%. So to get 6.1%, it's an outsized return. And I think that more of those returns in the 5 to 6% level can be expected near term because yields are higher. So that certainly helps support the 30%-ish to maybe even 40% that we're going to have in fixed income. But yeah, Chair Gordon, to lag by 0.9% is a disappointment. That is on the back of our asset allocation decisions. As I shared a second ago, we thought we were going to have a small recession at Legacy Highmark. And because of that, we were anywhere from 2.5% to 3% underweight equities for the bulk of 2023. We ended the year, as you see here on our positioning page, 0.5% underweight at 61.5%. But, 8-9 months of strong equity returns and having 2% to 3% underweight, it left the mark. And in this case, the mark was a 90 basis points trailing. Where are we today? Through appreciation of the assets, we're at about 63.5% as we started the trading day today. So we have a slight overweight to equities today. At the end of the month, which is in a couple days, we will rebalance back to a neutral position, 62% equities, 37.5% or so in fixed, and about 0.5% in cash. So we'll go back to neutral on the equity line item.
The large cap domestic equity, that's passive?
That is passive.
And if it's passive, well, for like the 1-year number, why is that 40 bips off?
Yeah, we, over the course, call it maybe the first 4 to 5 months of the year, we had a tilt to large cap value. So we were invested in the iShares S&P 500 value fund. And yeah, I mean, growth trounced value over the course of the year, and that led to the underperformance on that line item.
Okay, thanks.
Questions?
Any other questions for Andrew? I would just have a comment, not necessarily a question, about a recession call or not call. I think this the last iteration of will there or won't there be really highlighted the ridiculously politicized nature of that determination, how it's made, how many people actually are involved in quote, making the call. It's this weird, I feel like it's like a seance of sorts, right, that happens amongst economists who are historically never going to be aligned anyway. Decisions get made in that climate with that kind of uncertainty, and it's a crapshoot, as you found out, right? It's a tough environment to make a decision in with the nature of that call. And as I say, this last iteration really underscored how really what's the word I want to use? I'm not going to characterize it. I'll just say it's an unusual process. It's an unusual call, and a lot rides on it, and decisions get made one way or the other about it. But live by the sword, you die by the sword, right? That's just kind of it.
Yeah, and we get paid to make better calls. So sharpen the pencil and do better this year and going forward.
Go back at it. But overall, you're still beating the benchmark, and like I say, life is good. So it's a good story. You take the victory lap and it's all good.
I think the best part of the story is your 108% funding ratio. And that's on the back of your consistent funding over the 4 years or plus. So kudos to you.
Well, we'll see how it goes. But it's a good story. So, everyone likes a good story. Nothing wrong with that. Other comments or questions? I don't see any. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
All right.